thank you very much for the introduction. So I would like to, first of all, thank Jacqueline to have invited me to here, and all the organizers to give me the possibility of presenting our work in this very exciting conference. So today I'm going to talk about spontaneous mirror symmetry breaking in coupled photonic crystal nanolasers. I come from LPN, which is the same lab as Alberto this morning. Okay, so as you may know, there is an increasing interest in studying nonlinear optical cavities with few photons. I will give two examples on this. The first one I like very much. So this is kind of a new paradigm for quantum correlations. This has been proposed by Luca Savona in 2010. Essentially consists in two couple nonlinear cavities. One of them at least is nonlinear. And it worked in a regime in which there are few photons. And it turns out that you can have quantum interferences and then get, you know, strong anti-bunching at the output. So this work has been continued by other groups, and in particular by the group of Cristiano Ciuti, who did a very, very nice interpretation of this. Essentially, what you are doing here is to, you know, tune by means of nonlinearities one of the levels, and then you can get a nice picture in which you have this subtle interplay with, you know, photon tunneling, and then you can get this, you know, suppression of multiphoton output states. And the other a nice example, I would say that when you go towards this regime in which we have less and less photons, then we can think of, if we are interested in, you know, nonlinear optical transitions, then you can expect that some new things are going to happen. And this, I took this picture from a preprint that has been posted by the group of Cristiano, in which you can get these nice dynamic hysteresis cycles in a regime in a cavity where you have around 20 photons. And in general, what I would like to say is that our motivation is to study nonlinear dynamics in nanocavities. And when I say this, I refer specifically to instabilities, so bifurcations in the sense of nonlinear dynamics, and their statistical features with few photons. Okay, so one of the instabilities that we have been working on recently is so-called spontaneous mirror symmetry breaking. So when you think about spontaneous symmetry breaking, so you know that this is just a, you know, very general transition through which a system with a given symmetry ends up in a state with a lower symmetry. So you may know it from Bose-Einstein condensates, more recently in metamaterials. And in optics, has been studied in the 90s, actually, in, you know, large multimode lasers, and more recently for photorefractive media. This is a nice reference in which you can find a nice overview on the domain. But our goal here has been to demonstrate this spontaneous symmetry breaking of the mirror symmetry in an photonic system using two coupled nanolasers. Okay, so this is the outline. So I will first focus on double well potentials and how we can get this in a nonlinear regime using two coupled nanolasers, two coupled lasers, and then I will move to describing, you know, our specific photonic crystal system, which is given by two L3 coupled nanocavities. And I will spend some time here by just saying a few words of how we managed to couple, to control the coupling between the cavity, which is a key element. And then in the third part, I will show you the results about bifurcation and switching of broken parity states. And I will then conclude. So let me first say that maybe the most beautiful example, I like it very much, so it's just a mechanical example of what I'm talking about, is the buckling instability. So if you take the so-called Euler strut, so it's a strut and in a vertical direction, so you push it. And then, of course, at some point, if the force is low enough, then there is no lateral deformation. So the system is invariant under reflection. So. But so of course, this is the solution to this point. There is no lateral deformation. And from that some point over here, so the strut buckles either to the left or to the right. So you have this pitchfork bifurcation. And what we have to note here is that this solution, of course, or this one, are no longer invariant under this reflection. So this is in this situation. This is very likely. This is very very similar to what happens in a system in which you have one classical particle in a double wave potential in which you have dissipation and gravity, and then depending on the initial condition, you can end in the bottom of the first well or the other well, the other one. So this is essentially just to illustrate the phenomenon. And now, so let's focus on these double well potentials. And now let's put many particles in this system, let's say quantum particles. And so for example, bosons, let's think that all these particles are going to be in these fundamental states, or they are localized through the wells. And now if we think about some interactions between these particles, for us, in our case, of course, they're won't be any interaction, so we are going to have just a nonlinearity. So in that case, what you can have is localization at either the left, or the right one. Okay, so if you now think of a boson condensate, and this is kind of a question that you are certainly familiar with, so you can write down your amplitude equation for the waveform. In one well and the other one, you get this coupling term, and you can identify here interaction energy, right? So, as Alberto said this morning, in the situation in which you have your tunneling rate, which is smaller compared to the interaction energy, that is the condition in order to have this localization. Then, either you go for self-trapping, so you can as the group of Jacqueline and Alberto did recently. So you can excite mostly one of the pillars here, and then you get this nice regime. Or you can think of pumping exactly equivalently the two cavities. So in that case, you go for spontaneous symmetry breaking. There are some theoretical work on that. So this is the paper that has appeared simultaneously to our work, in which so this is a group of Jeremy Baumberg, and there is a demonstration of mirror symmetry breaking in the case of a polariton condensate just playing with spin phases. So the question is, what happens in the case when we have semiconductor coupled lasers? And actually, so if we now think of the system, a very simple one, in which you have one cavity, the left one, the right one, you write down your equation for the slowly varying field in the left cavity and the right cavity, you have a semiconductor medium, for example, a quantum well, so you have a carrier density. In the left cavity and right cavity, you have this K coupling term. This is pretty much the same as the J. The only difference is sign. You're not going to see why. And this is of course dissipation. So you write down your equation. This is a very simple system. This is really a coupled mode theory, which is nonlinear. This nonlinearity. So this is linear terms. This is nonlinearity, and nonlinearity here is like this is standard semiconductor nonlinearity, in which you have essentially this is mediated by this gain function, which is dependent on the carriers, of course, and you have this real part, which is simulated emission, and you have also this imaginary part, where you find here the well-known very important factor, which is the Henry factor, which couples the phase of the field to the carrier density. So this is, in some approximation, the term that couples, the nonlinear term that couples the phase and the amplitude of the field. We're going to. Yeah. R. Yes, I'm sorry. Yes. How to write here? I-L. Thank you very much. So. So this is again. So this is stimulated emission. This is the nonlinear term. And now, of course, this is the coupling term. So we have the coupling term. So you have this k. So this is describing frequency splitting, and you also have in general when you talk about coupled laser, you have this gamma factor. This gives you the loss split. Okay. And of course, spontaneous emission. And you have to add, of course, the right equation for densities at the left cavity and the right cavity.
So the coupling constant between the left and the right is constant?
Yes.
And
yes.
Can you control that?
That is a very good question. So the answer is yeah, I'm sorry. So the question is that this is this term complex? And the answer is yes. And if we can control it or not. And what I'm going to show you in the next few minutes is that we are able to control this k. Actually, it's sine as well. Not only the magnitude is sine. But the gamma is more tricky. And so in principle, no, because maybe there is an impact.
Can you control the phase of this time?
Maybe. Yeah. So, okay. So now, what I'm going to do is to try to, simplify a lot these equations, just to try to match some equations that I think you are familiar with. So, essentially, the one I have shown just before, and then the fact is the following: is that if you work in laser theory, we know that if you are working very, very close to the laser threshold, what we can do is to adiabatically eliminate the carrier density. And by doing this, you rewrite your equations. Now you put carrier density as a function of field, and then you get this complex equation in which you have a conservative part and the dissipative part. Of course, we cannot neglect this. So I do this thing in order to identify now this. This has been just before the interaction term. Now it's really nonlinearity. Yeah? So this nonlinearity is nothing to do with interaction of polariton particles. Yeah? So it's just to make that clear that what we have, is a kind of third-order nonlinearity, but that comes from one photon absorption and stimulated emission in the quantum wells. Okay. So, okay, we have this. If you write down an equation, you get this expression for u. Now it's negative. And now it's negative because we are above threshold. So you have stimulated emission. That means that if you have a photon and you deplete the carrier density, then you redshift your resonance. But these effects are still fast, right? But the sign is contrary compared to typical polariton situation. Okay, this is one thing. And the other thing is that the characteristic photon number you get in the cavity is something that you may know. This is very, very simple stuff. And this is inversely proportional to beta. No? The first thing is why do we use semiconductor lasers? So the answer is because you have a strong dispersive nonlinearities, so because of high U. And the other reason is, of course, since we have a small cavity, then we can go for high beta. In our case, beta is 10 to the minus 2, so not very high, not very high. So the quantity of photon that we have in our case, I'm going to show you after. In that case, quantity of photon is about 100. So, but by choosing carefully the design of your cavity, you can go to a situation in which this can be higher and higher. So if you have this, this is inversion proportional to beta, then by doing, of course, beta towards 1, you can work in a regime in which you can expect that you have few photons in the cavity. And this is, for us, very interesting for the future. So now let's come back to the spontaneous symmetry breaking mechanism here. So as I said, this is negative. This is negative. So in order to so in our case, actually, we're gonna have two modes, antibody and bonding one, and the mode which we lace is the one which has less losses. Okay, so this is the antibonding one. So if you wanna this mode to break its symmetry with this negative nonlinearity or self-focused nonlinearity, what you need is this k positive constant. That means that the antibonding mode should be the fundamental mode of your system, which is not the usual situation. But I have to say, in photonic crystal, you are going to see that this is a very, very easy thing to obtain. Okay. So now, let's focus on this equation. So now the condition is that, okay, in order to SSP to take place, the condition of the is that the tunneling should be less compared to this nonlinear, let's say, energy. So now, if we just use this expression, and if this is the number of photons that I have, is S in a typical regime, then you get this condition. And this condition is like, OK, this is a normalized splitting, frequency splitting, of these two modes, normalized to the line width of the resonance as a transparency. This divided by the Henry factor should be less than 1. So if you fulfill this condition, you can get your symmetry breaking in your system. And we tried to get this in the past. And it was really, really difficult. And the point in which we could really demonstrate this was the point in which we could control this k. So this is the really important thing, here. OK, so I move to this part in which I describe the system. So this is the photonic crystal slab. You may know it. This is a 3-5 semiconductor photonic crystal membrane, which is a suspending membrane. You may know the system. So I drill it with a lattice of holes. I take out, I remove some holes here, so I create the defect. So if I put two of these defects together, then I have, you know, a couple modes. And if I now have you know, active materials, I pump this material incoherently, then I look for micro PL, and then I get this typical spectra in which you know, the antibonding mode, this far field, the antibonding mode is a fundamental mode. And the reason of this, if you want to ask me maybe later, we can get into details. But the important thing is that if you think of a Fabry-Perot here of being just closing a W1 waveguide, so this is kind of easy to see that if you compute, if you think of a waveguide here underlying W1 waveguides in this system, and you compute the effective refractive index, what you get is that the effective refractive index of the bonding mode is less, is smaller compared to the other one. So this is exactly the reverse situation that you get usually when you couple, for example, rich waveguides. Okay. So the situation is exactly the one we want. The antibonding mode is the fundamental one. So k is positive. But in order to, you know, fulfill all the requirements to get this this phenomenon, what we need, we have actually used three design tools. The first one, what we need is a high quality factor. Of course, this is the reason of this is to get you know, a laser threshold for the nanocavities, which should be low. The other design tool is to improve emission directionality, and actually, what we are gonna do is to collect photons from the surface. Okay, so we need a good beaming in the vertical direction, and in order to do this, what we use, it has been proposed by the group of Alfredo De Rossi, which is the so-called van folding technique. So if you modulate these surrounding holes here by twice the period of the underlying lattice, then you can get this folding, and you can, you know, improve a lot your beaming in the vertical direction. And we have shown a few years ago that this holds in the case of coupled nanocavity, which is exactly what we want. But this is something that I want to spend 2 minutes because this is, as I said before, the key aspect. So what we need is this control coupling strength. This is an original design in the group. So actually, so as I said before, okay, so let's take these two cavities. So we modify the radius of the holes here in the middle. If I don't do anything, so I get a lambda splitting. This delta lambda is lambda antibonding minus lambda bonding mode. So if I don't do anything, so I get this of the order of 4 or 5, and this normalized to the resonant line width is 10. 10 is enormous. The alpha factor here is 7, so 7 is not less than 1. So it doesn't work. So this is too, the decoupling is too high. So we can think of, if the cavities are really strongly coupled, then it is very difficult to decouple them using the nonlinearity. So this situation doesn't work. So we have to tune the size of the holes here in the middle to reduce the radius, and then you measure the splitting, and you see that this is gonna be reduced. And the conditions in which we have actually obtained our phenomenon is this one. The splitting is of the order of 3 times the line width, and this is well adapted. And what you can notice here is that even if you keep on decreasing the radius of the hole there, then you can reverse the sign of the coupling. So in this situation, this is the antibonding mode, which is the fundamental one, and on the other side, in this region here, this is the conventional, the typical situation in which you have the symmetric mode being the fundamental one. Okay, so this is the final system. So what we obtain is a quality factor of about 5,000. This is a good trade-off. Because if you take a look at this condition, you don't want a quality factor to be very, very large. In that case, this won't be small. And of course, the other thing is that you need a control coupling strength. So you need this k, as I said before, small enough. So this, as I have just shown, this is 3 and this is 7. So this is a good condition. And last but not least, this, which is efficient free space coupling, because we need to collect enough photons. So now the experimental results. Okay, so this is the experimental setup. So again, so I have these two cavities. The material is indium phosphide, so it emits light at 1.5 microns. The cavities are separated by the same 1.5 microns. So we pump here with incoherent light at 800 nanometers. We use a spot here whose size is around the distance, equivalent to the distance between the cavity. We control it with a PCT piezo controller, which is very accurate, about 1 nanometer. And this is the waveform for the pumping. So what you have are triangular. These are triangular pulses, and the duration is 30 nanoseconds. And this duration should be much longer compared to the time scales of the photonic crystal nanocavity in order for the system at each pump pulse, the system nanolaser is being pumped in a quasi-static way. So the nanolaser relaxes at each time here during the pump ramp. Okay, so these are the pulses. The repetition rates should be low in order to avoid thermal heating. So the key, the important part here of this setup is to be able to collect light simultaneously from the two cavities. In order to do that, because of the dimension here, you can see that using a confocal detection technique and using single mode fiber, you can just partially filter the two nanocavities and be able to send this first signal to one APD detector and the other one. So we have 500 megahertz bandwidth APD detectors. Okay, so now we come back. We This is just, you know, the PEL spectrum in which you identify here the antibonding mode and bonding one, and this is over here for the, you know, small pump power, and then you increase your pumping, and what you see is, as I said before, the antibonding mode is the one which is going to lace, and the other one is being, you know, suppressed or very attenuated with respect to the first one, which is the bonding mode. So now, let me come back a little bit to the model and see what is the prediction of the equations. So this is, if I plot the output power of the antibonding, this is the solution of the antibonding mode of the system. So this is output as function of the input power in a semi-log scale. So what you see is the typical S-curve. As the this beta factor has been fitted from the experiment, this gives 10 to the minus 2. So this is a little bit these two decades that you see here. Okay, so in these conditions, actually now if you so in this solution here, which is antibonding mode, this is to just to, you know, to come back to this schematic picture. This is the mode which is completely delocalized, right? So now, if we superimpose to this curve the experimental results, so this is the maxima of the antibonding mode spectral line. So this, what you get is, is something that really that fits really well up to here. And when the model predicts that this state is going to be unstable, then what you see experimentally is that there is a saturation. Of course, you tell me that saturation over half. Thermally or whatever, of course. But now let's take a look at the other solution of the model in which, okay, so from this point, why this solution became unstable? This is because there are two new branches. So this is a picture of occasion. And it turns, okay, it turns out that if you are here or if you are there, what you get is these two localized states. Now, okay, another thing is that you can also have secondary bifurcations, which are Hopf bifurcation, which gives you limit cycles from these round points there. Okay, but these are states which are really, this is the prediction, is that that will be a state which are really oscillating very in a very fast way, about 150 GHz. Okay, so this is the prediction. And of course, in order to be able to find out if what we have is this SSB scenario or not, what we need is to take a look at the, you know, the temporal, you know, fast temporal measurements. So we resolve with the APD detector what is coming out from one nanocavity from the other nanocavity and compare them. So these are, of course, simultaneous measurements. And what you see is that this is typical segments of the time trace in which you have this fast alternation. So if you have a right cavity, for example, which is low, the other one is high, and vice versa. You make a zoom, and you see, okay, these features. Okay, so now we can, if you want to collect all the events together, then you put a threshold, and you can identify these two states. This one, so these are all the pulses, the output corresponding to all the pump pulses which are superimposed together. So this tells you that the light is, you know, localized inside the right cavity, and the other one, the blue, corresponds to the left cavity. So you get the two. And so now you can do the same thing, but instead of plotting this as a function of time, you plot it as a function of the instantaneous pump power. And what you get is this. So this is laser threshold. So now in, using linear scale here, in order to better see the bifurcation. So you, in a sense, you reconstruct the bifurcation diagram. So this is the laser threshold. And up to this point, everybody go together. And then from this point there, so you see these two branches here opening. Okay, and you see, of course, the two states. Either one high intensity, the other one low intensity, and vice versa. And which is interesting is that if you take a look at, so experimentally what happens is that this branch here, instead of keep decreasing, okay, as pretty much as you know, as the fixed point here, what happens is that experimentally what you see is that this is increasing again from this point. And this is in good agreement with the model, because if you now integrate your equation and you use a filter, a 500 you know, megahertz filter, what you see is this is the black line here is the integration of the model with the filter, bandpass filter. And you see the same thing. The reason of that is very simple, is that from this point, the system starts to oscillate, and it turns out that the mean power after this oscillation is larger compared to the fixed point, so that's why you see your intensity increasing again. Okay, so now for me, it's very, very, I come from nonlinear dynamics. For me, it's very, very important to be able to, you know, experimentally confirm what I'm saying. If it is really a spontaneous symmetry breaking, what I have to say is to demonstrate that these two states are coexisting in the sense of bistability. So in order to do this, what we do is to now to launch short pulses, which are superimposed with the, you know, holding beam pump. And if I start with from this alternating situation, and I come with a short pulse and now which is shining the left cavity, and as long as this left cavity was in a high intensity state, this pulse is going to switch it down to the low intensity state, and simultaneously the other one is jumping up, and vice versa in the case of when I come to the other cavity. So by doing this, we have demonstrated coexistence of, in the sense of bistability of the two states. So spontaneous symmetry breaking. And we can also use this this mechanism in order to early trigger these events, in order to just lock our state and be able to image, you know, the localization using a slow 2D InGaAs camera. Okay, so I come to the conclusions. So we have demonstrated spontaneous mirror symmetry breaking in two coupled nanolasers. In the smallest photonic system ever, which has this model volume, and only 100 photon at the bifurcation. This has been measured, and also is obtained from the model with fit parameter from the experiment, so it's consistent. And we have done this, we have obtained this, thanks to a compact system with strong nonlinearity and controllable coupling. As I said, these are the two important key elements. And I have shown to you the picture of bifurcation and control of broken parity states via short pulse switching. Of course, the prospects are okay. So we can think of integrating nanophotonic flip-flop memories. This is very nice, but so for an application, if we think of an application which is very, very important, is the possibility of electrically pump the system. And I have to say that the good point is the maturity, technological maturity of the kind of cavities in our group. Fabrice Raineri, one of the collaborators, has mastered the technology of electrical pumping of this another kind of similar kind of nanocavities in photonic crystals. This is a very, very good point for the future. And also, you can think of larger molecules. If you take three cavities or more networks, you can, you know, study this in different coupling configurations, either open or closed triangular configurations, and so on. And for me, this would be the take-home message, which is for me the most motivating one. Is now, so it's, as I said in the very first transparency, is what happens now if we can increase this beta factor and go, even we can decrease it by touching also to the coupling strengths, to decrease this even more up to 10. This is really something that we wonder whether we could get in our system quantum correlation close to, kind of instabilities like SSB. And with this, I would like to thank all the people in the group that have participated in this work, Samir, Fabrice in the technological part with Isabella and Grégoire, Philippe Amel, Mathias, a postdoc, and Ariel Levinson. And I would like to thank our theoretical collaborators at the Institut d'Optique and also support and funding. Thank you very much.
I'm really confused. So I'm trying to, how do you, is this spontaneous symmetry breaking?
Yeah.
So let's say when you go to, let's just look at the results.
Yeah.
You're pumping both of them equally.
Yeah, equally.
Right?
Yeah.
And where is the center of your game medium?
I'm sorry, maybe, okay, so the game medium is quantum waves which are embedded into the membrane.
Yeah, no, spectrally, where is it with respect to the two modes?
Okay, so that's, okay, so that's 1.5 microns, that's the center of the gain, and the optical modes are shifted a little bit with respect to the gain maximum.
So I'm asking whether is the, let's say, if you atomic transition frequency,
1.5 microns.
It's right in between those two?
No, 1.5 microns. This is the atomic transition, let's say,
yes.
So the semiconductor band gap, 1.5 microns, and the modes are 1.53. So 330 nanometer shift with respect to the maximum of gain, taking into account that the width of the gain is 75 nanometers.
If you just could draw it, because I don't understand really.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's just like the atomic transition frequency, the two modes.
Okay, so this is, if you want, this is gain. The atomic transition will be here. To be more precise, 1.51 microns. And the resonances are there. The two of them are there. The photonic mode is there, and this is the gain curve.
Okay, so when you go to your results then,
So results, so this for example?
Not that one, the spectral. Yes, here. So you increase, there's first one mode.
Okay,
that
so
the, crosses the threshold.
Yeah, so this is antibonding mode.
Antibonding.
So these are you know, bonding antibonding mode. There is one mode which is gonna lace because the one who has less losses.
Yes.
This is lacing.
Yes.
So I just this is the one which is gonna lace. Of course.
So in spectrum I see one frequency.
One frequency.
Okay.
Yes. So this I can just come back. This one. Okay. So this is the split mode. And this will gonna lace, this is the only one.
But then, I mean, once this mode is lasing.
Okay, it's lasing, and then up to some time, track, there is this symmetry breaking transition in which you have localization. You have two possible states, either higher intensity in the left cavity and lower in the right cavity, and vice versa. These are these two branches over there.
It's just quite unusual to draw this kind of bifurcation diagram for an incoherently pumped system. So that's maybe a confusion point.
Why? Because this is a pump. It's a pump parameter. This is a parameter in the system. So a bifurcation diagram is something that you follow. You follow your solution as a function of a parameter, which is the pumping here in the case.
Okay.
Yeah.
So one of the things that are really fun about working near spontaneously symmetry breaking is that you get some fluctuations as you approach the critical point. And I didn't see any exponents being presented, so do you have a chance to try and look for critical exponents as you get near these transitions?
Exponents?
Critical exponents.
Ah, no. So about fluctuation, what we are sure, okay, so we have, no, we do not measure any critical exponents here in this work, but what we have done actually is to experimentally be sure that in this kind of segments, the mechanism that makes the system jump to one state or the other one are, spontaneous fluctuation. So the way we do that is essentially we measure the pumping stability. So because the first thing that you can think of is okay, your pumping your pumping can move a little bit. So in that case, maybe they are not the fluctuations, the spontaneous fluctuations that make the system jump, but some external parameter which is changing. So that if this is the point, so the answer would be, okay, we have measured this with a four quadrant detector, and we have actually, so I can show the results. So what we know is that the fluctuation in size of the focal of the pump beam is this. Okay, the first thing that you have when you get this, and is that you compare with the shot noise, so the quantum limit. And the quantum limit in the bandwidth of the experiment is 30 picometer. So we are very close to this, so this is state of the art. And the, but more important than that, is that you study, you need to know if the system, which is the tolerance of the system, okay? And it turns out that when you, so this is really something that comes from the model, and the tolerance of the system is 500 picometers. So if you are within this tolerance, this is the noise that makes the system jump. So it turns out that we are inside. Okay, but no critical exponents. I'm sorry.
Let's thank the speaker again.